Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Welcome to episode 75 of Growth Marketing Today. I'm your host, Ramley John, and I'm here on a mission to help marketers and founders like you sharpen their marketing skills by talking to some of today's top experts. Today, I have Andra Zaharia. She's a senior content marketing freelancer who has worked with BBC Capital, CyberGhost, and the CEO Library. And this episode is all about writing compelling content in a boring industry. Now, if you surf through the internet looking for content marketing tips, strategies, and case studies, you may find plenty of examples that work. Unfortunately, those examples don't resonate with a boring industry that you're in, and it doesn't inspire excitement and innovation. So the question you may have is, what do you do if you want to make content exciting in an otherwise boring industry? Now, Andra faced that kind of challenge. She wrote articles in the cybersecurity industry. Not a lot of people are excited about that. But her articles on ransomware ranked number 3 in Google and has resulted in a traffic spike of 800% in one day because of a global ransomware outbreak. In this episode, you'll learn, first, what are habits of high-performing marketers? I've thought a lot about this as the year ends, and what kind of habits do I want to establish for the new year? And I'd like to encourage you to do the same. What are habits that you want to build for the new year? Second, why do content marketers need to act more like translators, like translating German to English? What does that even mean? And we'll talk about that in this episode. And third, how to use emotions and storytelling to write a compelling article, even in a boring industry. Now, before we jump in, I just want to thank those who made this episode possible. These folks help cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so I can focus on getting amazing experts that you and I can really learn from. So I want to thank the sponsor for this episode, Rank Science. Rank Science is really the easiest way to grow your organic traffic and get your content ranking higher in Google. Now, if you're an SEO, this thing is cool. It allows you to A/B test your landing pages. You can sign up for a risk-free 30-day trial at rankscience.com/growtoday, or you can find that link in the description of this podcast. I also want to thank my Patreon supporters. They get an ad-free version of this podcast. They also get the podcast episode a day before everybody else. I want to thank my early adopter Patreons, Jamie Ward from Las Vegas, Veronica from London, UK, Vizio Marshes from Brazil, Nicholas Vargas from Sydney, Sam Grover from New Zealand, Joseph Valenti from Quebec, Canada, Louis Nichols from Switzerland, Anwar from Canada, Jason Ng from the United States, Jan Kusel from Czech Republic, and Algracia Diaz from Canada. If you're interested about supporting this podcast on Patreon and getting an ad-free version of this podcast, you can go to patreon.com/growtoday, or you can find that link in the description. Now, about this, let's jump in my chat with Andra. Hello, everybody. I'm so excited to talk to Andra. I've been on her I followed her newsletter. I follow her on Twitter. She shares some really valuable, cool stuff about marketing and content marketing. And now I have her here on the show. Hey, Andra, how's it going?
Hi, Ramley. Thank you for all your lovely words. And, you know, thank you for kind of making a bit of time and space into your life for my bi-monthly musings they're a very strange mix of things. So I'm really appreciative that, you know, people give me a chance to reflect while trying to share, I guess, some of the things that have helped me.
Yeah, your last one was really touching about lessons that you've learned. I think vulnerability and just being open about the things that you've learned is a great way to kind of make you real as a person versus like this person on the internet.
Oh, yes. I'm so much behind that. I think that, you know, when I started in digital marketing about 11 years ago now, that's a long time, I had the privilege, I guess, to find some people that not only talked about what they do, but how they do it and how they think. And that's what's made actually the biggest impact on me. And vulnerability, I think that it has become something, a core topic in our community as marketers in some bubbles. But I often find that while we find it kind of natural to talk about these things. There are so many other people that would probably benefit from having a conversation around vulnerability, but don't have the courage to do so, or don't know how to talk about it because they don't have the vocabulary, I guess. And I find that, you know, I think we should talk about our struggles and the way we approach them a lot more often, because that's actually one of the most helpful things for us as a community, especially in this role, in whatever marketing role you are. I think it requires, you know, a very intense and both mental and emotional effort to be good at your job. So yeah, that's how I see things around this idea.
And I think that totally relates with content marketing. I think the content that feels less like it's coming from a company and actually like you're talking to a person, that's better. But I'm getting ahead of myself. I'd like to know a little bit about your story and how you became a freelance content marketer, because I love hearing the story, because you know, when I was very young, I thought that career is very linear, but I learned that it's totally not. So maybe if you can share a little bit about your story and how you got to where you're at right now.
I think you framed it so perfectly. I was actually just having a conversation about this earlier today, about, you know, how you see yourself evolving as a professional over time, and the things that you thought were certain or very, I don't know, set in stone change a lot as you mature and as you grow as a person. So I think that kind of is a quick overview over my evolution. And another thing I realized recently that kind of, you know, when you look in hindsight, you're able to connect the dots. You obviously don't often do that when you're thinking about the future, when you're trying to plan your life or your career. So in hindsight, I realized one of these days that as in my position now and in my role as a freelance content marketer, I actually managed to transform the projects and the kind of work that I was doing sometimes on as side projects or through volunteering or things like that, into my, well, full-time job, which I found super rewarding about this. I recently celebrated my first year as a freelancer. That was a big milestone for me because last year, around this time, or, well, earlier a bit, I was very, let's say, I had difficulties in navigating all the uncertainty that comes with being a freelancer. It was the first time in my life that I'd become a business owner, that I saw myself like, I'm alone now, I don't have a team, I don't have someone to rely on, it's just me, and I'm going to figure out how to make this happen and how to, you know, enjoy this process and just discover myself in a different role. And how I got here is that over the last decade, I guess, I've had various roles. They've all been in digital marketing. So I started actually as a digital marketer working with local entrepreneur here in Romania. It was at the beginning of digital marketing as an industry here, because we're, let's say, a few years behind in those terms. It was a very interesting time. And how I got my first job is that actually I'd started 2 years prior, I started a personal blog on a January 1st, after a very boring New Year's Eve. I had no idea back then that that would actually change my life. And this is an understatement, if anything. So I started that blog and I started getting involved in the community. It was a tight-knit community at the time because things were just becoming to, you know, just were just taking shape. We actually had like tweet meets. I mean, we'd all get together at a bar or a pub and we'd get to know each other and talk in real life. And we had name tags with our usernames on it. So much simpler times, very fun times. And in this community, this entrepreneur kind of observed the fact that I was active, that I was the kind of person who liked to get involved in things and get things done. And he hired me. We did many consultancy projects for brands, both big and small, which was a very interesting experience for me because at the time there was a lot more, let's say, openness towards experimentation. Things were, again, just, companies were just getting on Facebook, which was, it feels like a lifetime ago, basically. So there was this experience, and then I had various roles that were always somehow connected to content creation. But not only that, given the fact that I'd started getting involved in the digital community locally, I also developed a habit of following many people in the international community, both marketers, entrepreneurs. Usually I was always somehow around startups, and I started getting very interested in tech. So that was kind of my natural interest towards that. Really made me inclined to start exploring Twitter, which is still my favorite social network by far. I mean, it's brought me incredible. It brought incredible people in my life and experiences based on those connections. And it's simply, I mean, my Twitter bubble is amazing. I know that not all Twitter bubbles are wonderful, but mine is absolutely beautiful. And it's actually how I discovered you. So here we are, proof, same. Case in point.
That's how I found out about your newsletter and your work is through Twitter.
Exactly. So that was a great opportunity for me. And I've always been kind of, you know, with one foot here in the community in Romania, working and advancing, and also one foot in the international community. And it was actually this combination basically brought me my first jobs in working for companies that had an international audience, which was something I've always wanted to do. So around almost 6 years ago, I started working officially in content marketing, in the sense that I'd always done bits and pieces of it, many at a time, or, you know, in a more fragmented way. But when I was in college, and after that, when I was studying for my master's, I had no idea this was a thing. This did not have a name. There was no way to define what I did, which, you know, always makes it difficult to explain to parents.
Yeah, it's so true, especially holidays, right?
Yes, and they're coming right about the corner. We should, like, do a project with, you know, one sentence statements that describe what you do. it was a very interesting time. The way I got started in this is that I was working for a community and a conference for tech startups. So we did a lot of events. We did things like email marketing, everything that goes around event marketing. Plus we had a co-working space that was actually the heart of the community, and I'm happy to say it still is, where we had weekly events. I think I did organize, helped to organize, moderated, prepared questions for, and promoted around almost 150 or more events in around 2 years. So it was a very intense time in my life. And through that community, I met, and through the online community in Romania as well, I met a former manager of mine and a mentor of mine who I learned a lot from, who actually offered me a position in an up-and-coming cybersecurity startup that had a part of the team was in Denmark and the rest was in Romania. So that's basically how I started working as a full-time, you know, rightfully called content marketer. And it's how I discovered cybersecurity, and I totally fell in love with it. It combined my interests for technology, for human nature, because, and this might surprise people who are not familiar with the industry or don't see it like this, cybersecurity is not about technology, it's about human psychology. Any experienced cybersecurity professional will most likely point to the same conclusion after working for a few years in it. So it combined all of these interests for me. And the great part about that particular job, and it, it had a huge impact on my evolution as a content marketer and as a human being as well, because it gave me, so this manager of mine, Aline, gave me the freedom to experiment with many of the things that I kind of felt that came naturally to me, and things that followed my intuition, because I was reading a lot, you know, trying to understand cybersecurity concepts. I had a background of creating content, of connecting to communities. So everything came together in this role. And it came together beautifully because we created some of the things that I'm most proud and happy with, to have contributed to the industry. And it was a very interesting time in cybersecurity as well. Content marketing was not really used. The industry had a mix between content that was highly technical, very fragmented, but highly technical, which was obviously not for mainstream audiences. Cybersecurity was not yet in the headlines, mind you, in 2015. And there was also kind of superficial, more fragmented content that approached some of the topics, the non-technical kind, but not in a way that would make you connect with them. And the main principle that was used in the cybersecurity world was FUD, fear, uncertainty, which is not the direction that we wanted to go in. And the fact that my principles and the principles of the team and my manager at the time really coincided and overlapped beautifully, we decided that to build a brand from the ground up, because when we started, there was nothing there. We only had a product, but no one knew about us. We had no customer base. I mean, we were really starting from scratch. And obviously, we didn't have a budget because, well, a bootstrap startup. And that's how it works. So we started experimenting with all these things. And we built the brand from zero, basically, to achieving, I mean, quite some milestones for me, which was... we had things like we had a security alert in early 2016 that got like almost 400 backlinks in 2 weeks, which was massive. But that was, so I contributed to that. I kind of started a fire, but then it took off by its own because it was a timely piece of information. And there were all these circumstances that worked together. Another thing that we did is that we experimented with email drip courses, and we created a lot of educational content that did not have any commercial intent, because that was our sweet spot as a company. We came in to fill that gap between the highly technical content and the very superficial content that people didn't really connect emotionally to. So we tried to teach them in a way that was constructive and in a way that helped them educate themselves to make better decisions around everything cybersecurity related, whether it was choosing a product over the other or knowing how to behave online and how to protect their information and their privacy. So that was a very interesting experience for me. And it was also in the course of this job that I went from implementation, so doing everything from outreach to creating content, to working with designers and developers to get assets done, to email marketing and many, many other things, as you do in a startup. And I went from there to actually managing the entire marketing team when my manager left, and he actually, you know, he went to the CEO and kind of proposed that I would take over the team. And This was also a very valuable experience, the management one, but after doing it for almost 3 years there and in my next job, in my following job, I realized that it kind of takes me away from what I love doing the most, which is still, you know, writing and tweaking and connecting with people. So after that job and after this, the following job that I had, which was with a privacy company, so I was still in that area, but I just felt the need because I kept ending up in burnout. I've had over the last 10 years, I've had 4 burnouts, one of which was really bad in the sense that I almost got diabetes from overworking myself. We're probably going to talk about this, so I'm only going to touch on it a little bit. I'd gone to therapy, and basically it kickstarted this evolution process for me that helped me identify why I kept following that pattern. And one of the I identified several triggers that would, you know, make me push myself in that direction. One of those elements was the fact that in an open space office, I could never focus on, you know, doing deep work. My role as manager obviously involved, you know, being available to people so they could talk to me, so we could go through things. But what it did is that it shattered my brain into pieces, like you would break glass. That's how I felt. I couldn't focus. I was super tired all the time. You know, all the sounds and all the movement for an introvert like me are very difficult if you don't have these pockets of quiet time. I think Susan Cain, who wrote Quiet, called them restorative niches, which is basically you create spaces of time where you can recover and get energized. So there was that. And then there was something that I think drives most people to freelancing or building their own business, which is I felt the need for more ownership over my work. I could get things done faster because that's just my pace. And also another thing, I had a very tough time dealing with endless meetings and, you know, things like the company politics that happens when companies grow. That was very difficult for me to deal with because I tend to relate to people differently and I'm very, very sensitive about company culture. So when those things don't align for me, I knew that, so I had this, I had the triggers, I had these challenges, and then I felt the need for more flexibility. I knew I could do, I knew I was a hard worker, I knew that I could put in, you know, a lot of time and effort, and I didn't need anyone to check up on me that I was doing my job, but I felt the need to have like a more flexible schedule, to find time for, you know, deep work and things like that. And I realized that maybe it's time that I took really like I took ownership of my work and try to find a way for myself as a professional in the industry in a different way. I was very lucky, and I think, you know, I feel like thanking my former self in the sense that throughout this time while I was, you know, doing all these side projects and cultivating my relationships in a natural way because I was actually interested in what people were doing and I was trying to help. All these things that I'd done for myself over time, so the fact that I had an identity outside my work roles, it really, really helped me. Because when I started freelancing, I already had multiple people who were interested in working with me, which I'm very super thankful for. So basically, a year ago, I decided that I would try freelancing for at least 2 years, in the sense that I knew I would face difficult moments. But when I faced them, I couldn't revert back to, I can just find a job because people will hire me. And this is something that I learned from a coach. You know, I knew that I had to make it work and that I wanted to make it work. And looking back at the past year, it's been the best year in my life so far. And I'm just incredibly happy that I finally took this route and then I finally found the courage to do it. So yeah, that's a very long-winded answer to your question.
No, that's really great. That's good to hear that. I mean, thank you for sharing about the stuff that you went through. I'm really particular about understanding the habits that you put into place to be successful as a freelance marketer, because that's such an important part of getting work done and really getting good work done is having the right kind of habits in place.
Oh, yes. And I can't emphasize this enough. I'm very lucky to have around me close friends. And one of them is super focused on habits. So I've learned a lot from her. She took on habits like running and, you know, has great results. And I have a lot of, let's say, disciplined people around me, a lot of self-aware people, I guess, because I believe that that's one of the most important things that any of us could cultivate, and especially us in marketing roles, because we're in charge, we're this interface that has to absorb and organize all these informations from so many areas and make sense of them and communicate them to someone else in a way that makes them care about them. Because I really think that, and it's not just me, I mean, neuroscience backs this up, our decisions are almost never rational. They're almost always emotional. And that's something we just have to accept about human nature and understand how that both empowers us or can, you know, hinder us from evolving. So this habits part is something that I really focused on in the past year. It also came as a result of the fact that I've been going to therapy for a long time, and that triggers a certain type of reflection, a certain type of looking at the world and looking at yourself. And I also added some coaching. In April this year, I worked with a coach who helped me in such an incredible way. I really think that it's important when you do these things to kind of find the right people for you. Because the moment we started talking and working together, it was very clear for me that he would be able to guide me towards, I don't know, frameworks and mental models and tools that helped me solve some of my issues, like dealing with anxiety in such a profound way that I feel like our sessions were yesterday. Plus, I've managed to actually decrease my anxiety by like 80%. It was at 90% at the beginning of the year. And now I haven't felt anxiety in, I don't know, over 2 or 3 months, which is unbelievable to me. So this part, this habits part, I started reading a lot more about it. I started observing myself and see how these habits influence me, because we talked about my podcast and how my kind of interest ended up here. Is that my podcast is about decision making. So I've been reading about this. I've been reading about it for at least 2 years, but probably more, but I never focused, like zoomed in on this particular aspect. And what triggered me to think about decision making is that in 2017, I took a workshop created by Seth Godin, which is called the ALT-MBA, which was the most wonderful, brilliant educational experience of my life. It was a month that transformed me, that helped me move from tactical thinking to strategic thinking in a way, I mean, it really accelerated my growth in an incredible way. And one of the topics that we talked about there was decision making. And you know, how we make decisions, how we observe our mental biases and try to, you know, gain objectivity, how we make decisions as individuals and in groups. It was an eye-opening experience for me. And I realized that many of the people that I look up to in various areas, there are some things in common, and that I would like to actually get to understand their process better, how they think about things, how they approach things, not just what they do. And I decided to do this decision-making podcast, and I love the reactions I get from people, because it provokes them to think about their evolution as professionals and as human beings in a different way. Plus, they get to talk about, you know, different aspects of their lives that sometimes they don't talk in public about generally. So that was very interesting to me. And while reading about decision making, obviously you read a lot about neuroscience, psychology, sociology, anthropology, all mixed together in one big universe. So while I constantly read about this, decisions and habits are always tied together. They kind of come as a package deal in every study. That's because a statistic that I read about in Charles Duhigg's book, The Power of Habit, which I cannot recommend enough, is that 40% of our daily actions are habits. They're not decisions. And many of them have become a reflex. They become automated and unconscious. So we spend almost half of our time doing things without realizing. Some of them are good, some of them not so much. And it's only when we actually get to cultivate awareness around our habits and understand how some of them are harming us and how some of them are empowering us to do more. It's only then that we can kind of make adjustments and unlock just an incredible amount of potential that we didn't even know we had. So as a freelancer, coming back to your question, in this, you know, this entirely new context for me, I'm a fairly organized person, but I knew I had to be a lot more organized. And I picked up a few super valuable tips from Paul Jarvis's and Callie Moore's podcast, Creative Class, which taught me so much about freelancing. And I got to understand, you know, that thought process, the challenges, and everything, all of these informations, I try to pull them in because I knew that it only depended on myself not to end up burnout again. Basically, that was objective number one. Don't end up, you know, in a burnout again, because I knew that, you know, otherwise you'll have done this for nothing, this change. So I started with that, and I started cultivating a series of habits that really, really helped me. So one of the things was kind of developing a habit of self-coaching by using, you know, the experience of working with a coach. I also focused a lot on self-care because I knew I needed a lot more energy to sustain that. And the fact that in the first 3 years of, well, this year, I worked almost nonstop, really, you know, it showed me that this is not sustainable. We need to figure out a better way. So there was that. And then some of the habits that I've had in the past helped me a lot, which is, for example, figuring out when I enter a new field or work with a new client, who are the people who their audiences looks at as key opinion leaders, their channel. So having this framework to look at a new context. And I build that through iteration and by, again, reflecting and looking back on what I did that worked and the things that helped me kind of uncover the type of information that's not readily available, you know, on a Google search. Because that's just how you end up with, well, Me Too content.
That's so good. I think that's something that people need to be more aware of, especially at, you know, the end of 2019. And there's a lot of times people, especially me, I'm reflecting on my past year and what I've learned, and really like starting to be more intentional about building the kind of habits that will help me sustain, become a marketer in the long term. Because you're right, like people burn out easily, right? Because it's always go, 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 and like acquire more users, write more blog posts, do more of these. And all of a sudden now you're totally burnt out.
Exactly. What's one of the habits that's really helped you this year? I'm really curious because you're juggling so many things and putting, you know, so much work into this podcast. So I know it's not easy. I mean, fellow content creator to content creator, it is not easy.
you're putting me on a spot. But no, it's something that I've already started thinking about. I think one thing that I want to do more is actually pick up a hobby outside. Podcasting used to be a hobby, and now it's like, oh man, this is, you know, it's not a hobby anymore. It's more,
I know.
You used to be, you know, I used to be like, oh man, this is cool. And then now I'm at the point where, like, you know, this is something that I should put out because it's helping out a lot of people. It's helping me out. But one thing I'm trying to pick up is chess. And also, I bought a Rubik's Cube to learn how to crack a Rubik's Cube and figure that out and get faster.
That's very cool. And I think you articulated something so valuable that I was talking about with Mariana Kay, which you also interviewed for the podcast. We were talking about the fact that how do you let your passion projects not turn into homework?
That's what it feels like.
And that's so difficult to do. And I know that, you know, she reflected on this a lot. And I love that she talks a lot about her process and the way she optimizes her workflow to fit, you know, her to be healthy for her lifestyle, to cultivate a healthy attitude towards work, because we all tend to get sucked into it. And she actually set up a small project where she decided, I'm just going to write for myself. Yeah. Like I used to, you know, when we started blogs. Without any pressure, without the pressure of optimizing it and making sure it has, you know, perfect on-page SEO and you have everything, because we just tend to go there automatically. And it takes, you know, this kind of mental separation can be very difficult. But I think that it is so worth the effort of working on it, because then you get to rediscover. So I've seen many people get, let's say, disenchanted with their work because they did too much of it and they forgot why they loved it. It's happened to me at times as well when I was really, really tired. And it's just, it's a shame to let all this passion kind of die out or be so overwhelmed by the intensity of it that you forget, you know, why you loved it in the first place. So picking just getting out of the house, anything that gets us out of the house and, you know, away from any screen, I think that is one of the best things we can do for ourselves.
Yeah, that's so true. I think you put it so well that, you know, podcasting has become, you know, a passion project, and now it feels like a homework sometimes. So yeah, I pull myself away and I read a book. I've started reading again. That's one other thing that I want to start picking up as a habit, is actually like read books. Like, I used to read a lot and I got busy, so I bought a bunch of books to like read over the holidays.
Oh, that sounds perfect. You know, I learned something the other day, which is a side note, but I think that people will be interested to hear about it. In Iceland, there's a tradition around Christmas whose name I'm unable to pronounce that basically translates to the Christmas book flood. And what people will do is buy a bunch of books and stay inside for Christmas and eat chocolate and read the books, because Iceland apparently publishes more books every year than any other country in the world, which I found incredible. I was like, what? And I just, when I read about this, my mom actually sent it to me. She sent me a Facebook post, although I'm not on Facebook anymore. But I saw this and I immediately, you know, fact checked it, and it's a thing. It's not just one of those things on the internet. And I found it absolutely beautiful. And I told myself, I'm so in for that tradition. That sounds like my perfect
Christmas. That's so good. That's so funny. When we come back in just a moment, Andrea shares why content marketers need to act more like translators and how to use emotions and storytelling to write compelling articles, even in a boring industry. I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode, Rank Science. Rank Science is the easiest way to grow your organic traffic and get your content ranking higher in Google. They have a platform that gives your content team superpowers. And I know, what does that even mean? Rank Science uses real-time search data and natural language processing to help you craft content that is highly relevant to searcher intent and maps directly to what users are actually searching for. So you don't have to guess the user's intent with the specific keywords. They figure that out with their algorithm, and this allows you to optimize your past blog posts and also plan out and create new ones, so you have a step-by-step plan for easy success. Secondly, they've created this platform that allows you to A/B test your SEO if you have a lot of landing pages, that help you test which HTML changes causes an uplift in search traffic. Now, the first time I heard that, I thought that was super cool. As an added bonus, their platform allows marketers to make SEO enhancements without eating up precious engineering resources. Now, Rank Science is used by hundreds of companies to grow organic traffic, from startups to publicly traded companies, including companies like BuildZoom, GoldBelly, Sweetness, and Career Karma. You can sign up for a risk-free 30-day trial at rankscience.com/grow today, or you can find that link in the description of this podcast. Now, if you don't like ads like this, support me for as little as $2 per episode for an ad-free version of this podcast. You also get every podcast a day before the public. How cool is that? And you're going to be part of a private Slack group every monthly, and have a chance for monthly video calls with me. You can go to patreon.com/grow today, or you can find that link in the description to help with the cost to maintain and grow this podcast. Enough about this, let's jump back in my chat with Andra. I want to shift gears a bit. I think you brought it up earlier about, you're talking about cybersecurity, and one of the topics you suggested we talk about, and I never thought about this, but it makes sense, is that the role of marketers, content marketers, and communication pros is essentially to be translators. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, imagine having two people, like, I'm not that familiar with German, and if somebody was trying to explain to me, oh, this product's so cool in German, I would not understand that. So that's what's happening with a lot of people, is that they don't understand the value of a product. And our role as content marketers is to translate that. So I'm curious, can you talk a little bit more about that, what it means for content marketers to essentially be translators?
I actually realized this after a few years of working, you know, in cybersecurity and in privacy, because obviously these are highly technical fields. When you boil them down, they boil down to human psychology, but without understanding some of the technical bits, at least, you can't make a compelling point to, you know, super educated, highly experienced chief information officers who've seen many, many things in their lives. So when I realized this, that I was a translator, is because I was able, so for example, fields like these, like cybersecurity, like AI, like privacy, they're very abstract. And the fact of the matter is that the more I read about neuroscience and studies and, you know, on every related topic around what we talked about earlier and more, I realized that our brains have not biologically evolved enough for us to understand or grasp these super abstract concepts. So, for example, when I was trying to basically explain to people how a cyber attack happens, they couldn't, no matter how much I used my words, I couldn't help them visualize. So we started creating these graphs, really, like simple graphs. They weren't made for technical people. They were made for, you know, people like you and me who don't have a technical background, weren't, you know, they're not trained this way, but that needed to understand where that attack comes from and how it actually ends up, you know, infecting your computer with ransomware, locking you out of it. And they've had like a huge impact. The industry started using them a lot more. I don't take any credit for that. I think that we're just in a place where we realize that we can't. So as, you know, people who understand these issues in cybersecurity, we can't make a real impact and help people on a massive scale unless we simplify all these things and we appeal to emotion, but not in a way that, you know, scares people into buying things. Because cybersecurity, there's a parallel here with medicine, who, you know, has been trying for many, 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 many years to teach us about proactivity instead of reactivity. So basically, that's what we were trying to do. And I realized that my role as a content marketer was not only to understand these things, but understand how to frame them in a way and how to explain them in a way that appeals to what people really care about, which is their baby pictures, their baby's pictures, or their wedding pictures, or their music collection. And these are things that I realized by talking to people. We had a delivery guy come into the office one day. He heard us talk about ransomware and he told me like, oh, do you guys happen to work in cybersecurity? Because my computer was just encrypted with ransomware and I've lost my entire music collection from the past 15 years. This is a deeply emotional experience, feeling like someone stole from you, that took something away from you, that invaded your privacy, your personal space, that we sometimes think the internet or cloud storage is, but it is not. These things, they are deeply emotional experiences. So I had to translate, you know, a product's benefits, you know, buy this before something bad happens, and, you know, tweak your habits this way so you can protect the things that technology cannot protect, which is clicking on links because you thought they were legit. I had to translate these into experiences online that would help people, you know, see their habits and their activities online through the eyes of an attacker. And that's when everything changes. And when you put people in a place to find, like, to act like a thief, to have the mentality of a malicious hacker, they will start seeing a lot of things. They will start realizing, like, I need a lot to work on. So that's kind of, you know, this translator's role works both, you know, in translating these technical terms into experiences people care about. But I think it also translates in a way of understanding business priorities and being able to transfer them into things that make sense for the company at that time and that help the company, you know, have a higher goal I'm not just making money. I, for one, can't work for that goal, I have to say. That's not motivating enough for me. And that's, I guess, one of the things that I love about cybersecurity, because it gives me a chance to actually help people. And, you know, getting emails from people like 5 years after you've written a piece of content, having people email me and say, thanks for putting this together. It's really helped me. I started, you know, tweaking my security settings. I mean, that's the biggest reward ever. So I think that that's our role as translators, to find this, let's say, this refinement, this reframing, to just find what people care about and speak to their needs in a way that's actually helpful.
And you said something there that really kind of hit it on the head, is that you're trying to speak to them on an emotional level, because when you get them in the shoes of the attacker, right, they get this emotion about whether it's fear or anger, right? They're being attacked, like they feel a little bit anger, or maybe they're a little bit afraid. So really speaking to that fear, is that what you find works the best, starting off from that point?
I think that people are intrigued by other people's experiences first, because, well, we're social creatures. So I often use, you know, the power of storytelling, basically, to help them understand, you know, that this, you know, just because you can't see cyber attacks, it doesn't mean that they don't happen to regular people. And we worked on several levels here. For example, we would often emphasize the idea that is actually true, that cyber attacks against individuals are not targeted specific. They're very rarely targeted at a specific person. They're called spray and pray campaigns, which basically means distributing malicious emails or infecting ad networks with the sole purpose of, you know, just catching whoever falls for the trick. And when you send out a million emails, if you have a 0.01% success rate, that's big money. Just because we're talking on a massive scale. So first we would tell people, they're not targeting you because you're special, because people always have this, you know, certainty that it cannot happen to them. And we try to give them, basically, to create some objectivity around this and show them, you know, how an attacker thinks, what their MO is, how they go about doing these campaigns, and what their consequences are. Because one of the other things that I've learned by reading a bunch of books on the topic is that us as human beings, we're lousy at estimating the risk or impact of a thing that we feel is immediate. So for example, when we're on a plane and we're going through turbulence, we immediately think we're gonna die. Statistically speaking, never has a plane fallen out of the sky because of turbulence, no matter how bad it was. So, but we can be objective around that because we feel this immediate danger. Instead, on the other hand, our brain is very, very bad at understanding the long-term effects and the compound effect of our habits and decisions in the long term, because having poor eating habits builds up cholesterol in your arteries, and your risk of heart failure in the long term are very statistically high. They're very, very high statistically, but we don't see that. We can't see that far off risk. So what I was trying to do basically through all this content is show them how, you know, all these consequences, that cyber attacks have all these ramifications. And for example, when you look at the big picture, which is something that I'm really worried about, is that all these data breaches that are happening, that we keep seeing in the headlines, what they're doing is that they're creating this immense pool of data that can be compiled about every one of us. And how an attacker might manipulate us in the future, and I know it sounds, again, very abstract, but this is actually happening, is that our identities will become very difficult to define. And as everything becomes digitized, our online persona and our offline persona, kind of the lines between them get blurred. And what an attacker might do is manipulate, you know, our faces, our voice through deepfakes, things like deepfakes, which are fake video renderings of your voice and face. Basically, they might use these to steal our identities, erase us from society. And I know it sounds like sci-fi, but we're very close to that. And things like that. So it's altering our identity as human beings in society, not just on the internet. And that's going to be one of the major issues going forward. That's why we can't figure out yet a better system to log into services than a username and a password, because defining identity is very, very difficult in terms of information and information security. So there's a lot that goes into articulating all these things and concerns and helping people, again, gain objectivity around their behavior, because you simply have to be able to make them care about this and to make them understand why these things have real consequences on their lives. And that's a process, and you get people in with curiosity, and you get them interested through storytelling, through, you know, the emotional side of things. And then you start, you know, getting them to care about this enough to start tweaking things and start, you know, using a password manager and things like that. They have to know that there's a real human being behind all of these, you know, pieces of advice, because otherwise it doesn't work.
That's so good. I like that. It's curiosity, storytelling. You're really trying to start a conversation, right? You don't want to just start off with, hey, buy my stuff.
Yes.
I actually want to start wrapping up. I'm hitting that hour that I have with you. One question I love asking is, what would be your one piece of advice to marketers who might be a little early in their career, or maybe a marketer who's working in-house who wants to get into freelancing?
So I think that the underlying advice here still goes back to human nature, and I know I keep repeating the same thing, but I find them extremely valuable and important. I would say study human nature to understand both yourself and your customers, because when you understand how people make decisions, how they use their, you know, how they adopt new habits, how they change their habits, why they make a choice or another, you start understanding what they care about. And especially as content marketers, we need to, you know, get people to come to us. And the only way we're actually going to be able to reach those people is if we speak to their actual needs, if we give them something that's actually helpful or delightful or that captures some of their experience. I really believe that as content marketers, we have to make people, you know, when they read our content or listen to it or watch it, they have to feel like we're telling at least a part of their story, that they're able to identify with those needs, wishes, and so on. Because otherwise, it just won't work. And we all know how, you know, intense the competition is. So I guess my advice is this, is that your path, you know, to growth is kind of inseparable. Sorry, I'm going to say that.
No, it's good. I think reiterating things really drives home that point.
I wanted to like say this again because I didn't finish the phrase and I wanted to to say it correctly. Okay, I stumbled there. So I guess my advice is this: your path to growth is inseparable from your evolution and performance as a marketer. So I say invest in your mindset, invest in your habits, and read a lot of psychology and everything that, you know, gets into your hands that way. Study how people do things, and that's how you'll be able to accelerate your growth immensely and figure out if freelancing is for you, if consultancy is for you, if any other role is for you or not.
So good. That's a great place to wrap it up. Just one final question. Where can people find out more about you and your work online?
So this is going to be a tough one because my name, well, is Romanian, of course. So that's a bit more difficult to spell, but here goes. This is basically my personal website where you can find my newsletter, my podcast, some bits of my work. So it's ANDRAZAHARIA. It's Andra Zaharia. Wow. That's how you say it in Romanian.com. But, you know, if not, just look in the show notes, and that's a much easier way to do it.
Yeah, it is. And I would say this again, sign up for her Andra's newsletter, because it's some really valuable, cool stuff that you're posting up, and very vulnerable and open stuff.
I appreciate it so much. And thank you for doing this. Thank you for investing so much time and, you know, helping marketers connect and helping them learn from others. I think that this is one, I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for people like you who did this on a daily basis. So I'm really incredibly thankful for both this opportunity and what you're doing.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Well, that was it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I learned so much from this episode, particularly about content. That's actually probably one of my weakest part about marketing, is content and copywriting. It's something that I'm actively trying to improve. So with that, I just want to share my three key takeaways from this episode. First, if you're in a boring industry, remember that it all boils down to human psychology. Use storytelling and emotional triggers to write compelling content, no matter what industry you're in or how boring the topic you're writing is about. Second, as content marketers, our role is to translate features and benefits to things that people really care about. Speak to their needs in a way that's actually helpful to them. With the cybersecurity that Andra was talking about, one way she did that was she created that image of how the attack would appear from the attacker's point of view. So that creates emotion and things that people really care about, and making it real. Like, what if you lost your audio collection from the last 15 years, or your baby pictures? You don't want to do that. It's very emotional. And third, take care of yourself so you don't get burnt out. As high performing marketers and founders, it's so easy to get addicted to working that we stop taking care of ourselves. In 2020, I made it a goal to pick up new hobbies like chess and Rubik's Cube, because podcasting is no longer just a hobby. It's gotten to the point where I have an audience like you who actually care about this, and I have to make sure that the production level is up to par and it's good enough. Did I miss something? Share with me your takeaways from this episode. You can find me on Twitter at RamleyJohn. My DMs are always open, or email me ramley@growtoday.fm. Before I end, I just want to thank those who made this episode possible. These folks helped cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so I can focus on getting amazing experts that you and I can learn from. I want to thank the sponsor for this episode, Rank Science. If you're in content marketing, this thing is cool. They have created this algorithm and platform that use real-time search data to help you craft content that is highly relevant to searchers' intent. And it maps it out directly to what users are actually searching for, so you don't have to guess that. This allows you to optimize your past blog posts and get it ranking higher faster, and also plan out and create new ones so you have a step-by-step plan for easy success. You can sign up for a risk-free 30-day trial at rankscience.com/growtoday. I also want to thank my Patreon supporters. They get an ad-free version of this podcast. How cool is that? They also get it a day before everybody else. So if you're listening to this, Patreon supporters got it yesterday. They also get access to all the Grow cheat sheets that's available, from the actual tips for all the podcast episode I have so far. My early adopter patrons, thank you, Jamie Ward from Las Vegas, Veronica from London, UK, Fabrizio Marches from Brazil, Nicholas Vargas from Sydney, Sam Grover from New Zealand, Joseph Valenti from Canada, Louis Nichols from Switzerland, Anwar from Canada, Jason from United States, Jan Kuzel from Czech Republic, Algracia Diaz from Canada. And if you'd like to support me, you can do so for $2 per episode for, like I said, an ad-free version of this podcast and early access. You can also get access to a private Slack group and have a chance for a monthly video call with me if you'd like. You can go to patreon.com/growtoday or find that link in the description to support this, to growing this show. You can also tell a friend about this or join the Grow Today mailing list. Well, that's it for this episode. Until the next one, this is your host, Ramley John. And as always, keep on growing.